there's a different level when you can actually hold something in your hands that you've built and say, I conceived of this, I put it together, it didn't work, I took it apart, I put it together again, extra number of times. And now I'm holding something in my hand that works. And I love that feeling.
It's really powerful because you understand why it works too.
Yes.
Because the X number of times, X minus one number of times where it went wrong, you said it went wrong because of that thing. And yep. I understand that.
Yep. 3, 2, 1.
Today, I have here my friend Adam Schroeder, and he is an engineer. Thanks for being here, Adam.
Hi. Thanks, Seth. It's nice to be here. I'm happy that my beard isn't interfering with any audio equipment. So yes. Maybe in a year it will be.
Yes. We'll see. Yes. Adam has gone through a number of different beard configurations. And I think the first time I met him, I feel like it might have been, it was very long. It's very long. And he's also got different legs on top and the beard. And I think the first time I met you, you didn't have anything on top and your beard was very long. It felt very kind of monkish.
Yeah. It's like guacamole. You push it down here, it comes out.
It's not like guacamole.
Not like guacamole. No, I'm Adam Schroeder. I teach at the University of Toledo in the mechanical engineering department. I just am finishing my third year of teaching. We had our last day of the semester, last day of teaching yesterday, which is a good feeling. I don't know if it's a better feeling for professors or for students, but I think we both agree that it's good. And I went to Toledo, University of Toledo for graduate school. And then I started teaching there. So I got my master's and my PhD. And now I'm the director of the Robotics and Automation Design Lab, or RAD Lab. And that's where we do all kinds of interesting, curious robotics research, things that I think is really interesting. And I figured out if you're asking somebody about the research you do, that's like asking grandparents, hey, can you show me some pictures of your grandchildren and maybe tell me just a little bit about each one? So I think by definition, I'm nerding out about about robotics.
And just like grandparents talking about their grandkids, you can't just say a little bit. You can go on forever, right?
That's true. That's right. True.
Well, I want to talk. So this first episode, I just want to kind of dig into a little bit about who you are, especially in your work and in what you love to do. Before we go into that, a few weeks ago I got to go over and visit Adam at his lab, and so you're showing me some of the projects that they're working on. But I want you to tell us about the towing project.
It's good timing for that, because Tuesday of this week was the culmination of that project, and that's when one exciting thing, one of the pictures of my grandkids I think I would have to show. We have these really simple robots in our lab. They're called TurtleBots Generation 3. They're not very big. They're about 8 inches tall and maybe 6 inches by 6 inches. They have two little wheels. So it's a cute little robot. It's meant to go indoors. And in general, one of the things I'm interested in is how group performance increases or scales as you add more and more robots to a group. And if we link all these robots together, how much pull force can we generate? And it can't just be that cut and dry. So I had to tell a senior design team, I want you to be able to pull my truck with me in it. And on Tuesday, they accomplished that. So we had about 35 robots connected to the two tow hooks on the front of my truck in two lines. And yeah, it moves the truck. They pull with 70 or 80 pounds altogether.
One of the things I love about, you know, areas of engineering and programming and things like that is you come up with a problem to solve, and then you can solve it, and then you see it in front of you working. So, I mean, I'm sure that was got a big sense of accomplishment from all the students working on that.
It's really satisfying, especially when you look back and you see, this is the progress I made this week and this mm-hmm. week and this week. And at the time, I didn't know if we were going to be able to do it, but we figured these two things out, and mm-hmm. and now it just works.
Yeah. Well, especially when you have those moments of, oh, I don't know if this is going to work. This could all fall apart, and this could go nowhere.
I usually like to end meetings with the team by asking, so is this thing going to work? And the first meeting, it was no one wants to give an answer, and even halfway through, it's still I'm an engineer, and I don't want to overpromise or something like that.
Yes, yeah. Well, and when you get into the real world, unfortunately, that tends to be something that you feel like you have to do a lot.
That's true,
especially when you're talking to non-engineers.
Yeah. I've learned that you can bet on people, though, and kind of ignore the technical particulars and say, I know this group of people, you guys are going to get something.
Yeah. My brother had a really interesting job for a number of years. He works at Fidelity Investments, and he worked with the engineering department that worked on different areas of their website. But he was the person, he always said he was a translator. And he said he gained this skill by growing up with me, because I've always been a nerd and always used really complicated language. He was the translator between me and my mother, my father. But his job at Fidelity for a number of years was he was the project manager, I think it was. But he always called himself the translator between the engineers and the marketing department. And he was the person that always said, okay, well, this is what the engineers said, but this is what they meant. Because when you're in a situation where you have a bunch of engineers and a bunch of people that do not speak engineering, there can be a lot of issues of translation.
Yeah, that's maybe a commentary on engineers' ability to explain things to a human.
Any human. So I want you to go back and tell me what got you into engineering.
I think I was lucky. I always knew, or didn't have to search my soul a lot and figure out I wanted to be an engineer when I grew up. My dad was an engineer. He was a nerd before I knew the word nerd. So you know that you grow up in your own bubble and normal is just what you see and experience. So my dad was curious about everything and not afraid that something he was doing other people would think was strange. So it probably started out that way. And I'm not the only one. My two younger brothers became engineers too. When I was a really little kid, I remember I wanted to be either a mechanic or an artist, and mechanical engineering is kind of a creative way of using mechanical devices. So I think it somehow culminated that way. I also wanted to be a cake decorator, but that didn't come about. That probably came from watching my mom. But I just it was something I'm just always been curious about, and it wasn't. Unlike other things in life, it just seemed like, yep, that's the right thing.
So I come from a computer programming background, and one of the first things I did was I was about eight, and I asked my parents to get me a computer. So they got me my first computer, and they got me a TI, I can't remember the number now, it's something 99, but they had spent so much on the computer. It was one of the old computers that had the cartridges, mm-hmm. so you could, they had games for it. But they had spent so much money on the computer that they didn't want to spend any more money. So they didn't buy any of the game cartridges. And so I got it home, and the only thing on there was BASIC. And it came with a manual on how to program in BASIC. So I just opened it up and started writing my own program. So that was my kind of entryway into programming in it. And it went from there. What were some, do you have one or two projects, engineering projects that you worked on when you were growing up that really got you even more excited and said, this is definitely the direction I want to go in?
So around junior high time, we have to do science projects. And in looking back now, I know that what I did is more a reflection of something my dad thought was interesting, but I learned a lot along the way. So the one year we planted different seeds, corn, soybeans, and maybe something else between two planes of glass. And then we put it on a centrifuge in the basement, and we just let it rotate for weeks and weeks and weeks. And so you can see how the roots of the plant are growing. They're growing towards gravity, the force of gravity, and the stalks or stems of the plant are growing away from it. And as you move further from the axis, there's a more severe effect because of the centripetal acceleration. And it was just, it was really interesting. Mm-hmm. And still pretty simple. And I guess I got used to the idea that the other kids in my class didn't do things like that. So that was one. Another science project was trying to determine the density of wood. And my dad and I went out and we got maybe 40 different kinds of wood, and mm-hmm. including traipsing to sawmills and having them cut up wood and into woods and measure the mass of all this wood, and then just use a little bathroom scale and a little hydraulic jack to break each one. And it's really funny to look back at that now after going through strength of materials classes and mm-hmm. mechanics of materials. And mm-hmm. I guess understanding what's happening, it's a really, really beautiful thing. And not being afraid that what I'm doing is different than what other people are doing. Mm-hmm. Looking back now, I think if I were unsure about anything, that put me on the path for sure.
Yeah. I took one class, one of the first classes in my master's program was on digital, and I don't remember the name of the class, but it had like digital interfaces and real life interfaces, and it was part programming and part hardware, and so we did a lot of Arduino projects. But I love that. I mean, being someone that has done mostly coding, and being able to see something on the screen, there's a different level when you can actually hold something in your hands that you've built and say, I conceived of this, I put it together, it didn't work, I took it apart, I put it together again, X number of times. And now I'm holding something in my hand that works. And I love that feeling.
It's really powerful because you understand why it works too.
Yes.
Because the X number of times, X minus one number of times where it went wrong, you said it went wrong because of that thing, and yep. I understand that. Yep. And yeah,
was it Edison, I think, that said that he made like 900 or some very large number of light bulbs that didn't work, and then he made one that did. And that's the process, and it's not, and those all those ones that didn't work, were still helpful.
He must have had a lot of confidence in himself and gumption. So good on him.
Yeah. But the project that I did, I remember it was for the final project, was I'm a home brewer, And so I wanted to do something tied to that. And so I made, I found a little sensor and built a little sensor around the airlock that was able to count bubbles. And it was such a simple thing, but to say, I was like, I wanted something that did it. I went out, I found the right tools that I needed to do it. And now I'm holding something that works, which is just so, yeah, so satisfying.
Yeah, it's a great feeling. I get to do that part less these days. It's more helping my students mm-hmm. along and hoping at the end that it's working.
So tell me about that. That's an interesting transition from doing the research and doing the projects to teaching and helping students do that. What has that transition been like?
First of all, it's just important to be there physically and talk to them. It's different working with people. You can't just tell them you need to do this thing and this thing and this thing. Each person's personality is a little bit different. So it's been a lot of more learning about people in general than and then the technical troubleshooting process. You know, that critical thinking, we can go through that, but figuring out what things I need to do that's going to resonate with that group of students. Mm-hmm. Am I telling them what to do? Am I just suggesting things to do? I usually want them to take ownership of it. So there's a difference between advising and managing. Mm-hmm. I want this to be their problem. And I'm just there along the way mm-hmm. and maybe looking for things that they didn't think about before, but it's not me driving the ship.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I always tell them to come to meetings and tell me what you guys would like to talk about. So, I'm just the guy with a pretty face.
When do you do any engineering projects just for fun? And two, have you already started doing things, or are you looking forward to doing engineering projects with your kids?
It's gotten to be a grayer area between work and play because some of the things I do in my lab are things that I just started doing for fun. Over Christmas break, in my mind, I thought, I think I could build a robot that folds like this and moves like this, but I can't write an equation very easily to see if it's going to do that. I'm just going to build one for fun. So I get to do it. And it worked, or at least my version with cardboard and duct tape worked. And then I gave it to a student, and then they made it something much more wonderful and beautiful than what mm-hmm. I did. So a lot of things start out like that.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, sometimes it's hard to shut off our minds, and so we're still thinking about things. I love doing things with my kids related to these projects. So mm-hmm. I try to get videos and I can show them, hey, look what these students did, and they like building robots too. And yeah, we're already doing nerdy things together like that. And that's a lot of fun to see. Someone innocent and young excited about things mm-hmm. like that. Dad, look, there's a robot with snacks. No, that's a vending machine. Let me tell you about it.
I love that our kids pick up our language.
Yeah.
And then they make assumptions.
Yeah, so they're always building things with Legos, and Dad, look at this this balance robot, or look at this six-wheeled robot that I made. And yeah, the day is coming.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have the patience yet to sit down and try and I have to have things in order mm-hmm. before I get them ready to yeah. work on them right now.
Yeah. To shift gears a little bit, I want to talk about what it is like as an engineer and your faith. Do you think that there's, what kind of overlap do you see as far as, you know, you have your love of engineering over here, but then you have your faith over here, and where do they intersect, and does your life as an engineer, does that help or hinder? The, how does that impact your faith life?
I figured out a while ago that it can't just be two separate things for me. Like it can't be this completely divided secular occupation. At some point I thought, I'd like to be able to help other people. That's one reason I thought I'd like to go to graduate school, become a professor, teach other people. And I sometimes felt guilty about spending all this time thinking about technical topics, things that are not directly helping people, like a nurse is directly helping someone. And it took me a while to realize God made me this person who's curious about things and who wants to dig in and understand why, and that can definitely be used for good. So I guess accepting that helped me marry, you know, being an engineer, which requires all that curiosity and technical acumen, with a faith life where you realize the worth of an individual person. And teaching is great for that, because you know the people are important. They are what is important. It's not the email that I'm writing right now, or the 10 other things that I have to do. So engineering and teaching, I think, fit together really well with my faith. And I hope that people wouldn't see it as some completely other different person. I don't talk directly about my faith with a lot of students, but just by trying to show how people are important, I think is one way that marries the two.
Do you think that that being engineer, has that helped you? Are there areas in your faith that has helped you? Do you think that has helped you in, you know, whether it's studying scripture or, you know, understanding how? I mean, one of the things I love about the Catholic faith is that there is so much reason tied to it. It's not just, okay, here's this God, believe in him. This is what he tells you to do, do it. That there's reason behind it.
Yeah, I don't really see any contradiction between the two. There's no thing that I can learn about the physical world that I think is going to shake my faith, and I think it's really the opposite. Learning more and more about the physical world, I think that is it's beautiful, and there's so many different layers of understanding, things that we thought we understood, and now we zoom in another 10 times under the microscope and say, well, actually there's something different going on here. And yeah, for me, I guess it's an appreciation as we discover more and more about creation and the little forces that make things work the way that they work, and the parts of it that we don't understand yet, and we can marvel at it. I think it's more that as an engineer, I get to see the beauty of all of these natural things, and it's kind of a simultaneous appreciation from my nerdy engineering side, like, oh, there's that Newton's second law, boy, it's a beautiful thing, and from the faith side of, you know, what a wonderful wonderful creation, so high are your ways above my ways and thoughts above your thoughts, and something I can never conceive of, but I can appreciate.
Yeah, well, and going back to what you're saying at the beginning, the thing that you growing up, you either wanted to be an artist or an engineer, and that, you know, you're being a mechanical engineer is a combination of the two. Realizing that that, you know, we're created in God's image, and as an engineer, or, you know, as an artist, like my wife is, we take part in God's act of creation. That God gave us a creative spirit, and you know, whenever you're making something, that you're doing what God did in a smaller scale.
You can simultaneously appreciate what you've done and be amazed by it, and then also say, this is really, really humbling and modest compared to this grander creation. But that joy of creating is amazing. Conceiving of something, thinking through where it might work, where it might not work, iterating to get to something that finally does work. Yeah, there's simple joy in going through that process.
Now, I'm pretty sure that God did not do the iterations. God did not make mistakes and then fix it. But even the fact that in our imperfection, in our making mistakes and finding ways to fix it, that we still can find joy in that.
That's true. Yeah, we still have to learn. So that's just us doing the necessary learning along the way.
Yeah. So are there any things outside of engineering that you enjoy nerding out about?
I'm curious about everything, it turns out. So I'm by default curious about something when anything breaks, just like the stereotypical engineer that something breaks and they want to figure out how it works and then fix it. So I'm by necessity curious about those things, but all kinds of other things. Friends that homebrew, I think that's really fun, especially if they have all the equipment and I just show up and help them. Metal detecting is really fun, especially during a pandemic when you can't go anywhere, but you can metal detect your yard and find every nail and piece of aluminum flashing and pull tab that someone dropped 45 years ago. I'm interested in how things work, and if I have a reason for some specific example, it doesn't take a whole lot to get me to jump at it.
Mm-hmm. Now, here's an interesting question. Did you ever get in trouble with your mom growing up for taking something apart that she would rather you have not taken apart?
That's a great question. My domain was more the outdoors and taking apart my dad's gas lawnmower. I know that one didn't go back together, but it didn't work before, to be fair. Yeah, I can't remember a specific example. It's more of a general, Adam, you did that again.
My mother walked in one morning, I think I was, or one day, I was probably around 10 or so, and I had taken a light bulb, and I'd taken an electrical cord with the two bare wires, duct taped them to the light bulb, and was just about to plug it in when my mom walked in and said, "No!" And yes, the number of remote controls and other things like that I had taken apart to see how they worked. I don't know. I think my mom said at one time that they had that in their budget. Okay. Things we have to buy again because Seth took it apart.
I'm able to formalize that today. One of my classes, my mechatronics class, I make students reverse engineer something. Mm-hmm. And I say a good place to start is something that doesn't work. and maybe you'll be able to fix it. But I think I have like maybe a 15% conversion rate of broken things to now operating things.
But every single time you have more knowledge about how that works.
I like that you can look at something like a cordless drill and say, I know what's happening. Mm-hmm. The battery's right there. And I know that it has this kind of battery cell and they're connected like this. And there's the trigger. And I know how that chain that makes contact. Yeah. And yeah, there's the motor there with the gearbox in front of it. And
yeah, there's a movie that came out a few years ago, Stranger Than Fiction.
Yes.
Have you ever seen that? I one of the things I love about that movie is the graphics that they did around the main character. They show these graphics around his head and it shows how he's thinking. It's this man, he clearly has some sort of OCD, but he analyzes and he works for the IRS.
Right. Yeah.
But he looks at everything and he tries to figure out, and this is how I have to do it, and this is what exactly. But the way they show it, I can picture that, like you're saying, about working knowing how to drill works. I can see that, you know, you're looking at a drill and like there's these little things going off in your head. Okay, it's like, well, the electricity goes from the battery, it goes to the motor, it is energizing these coils and it's making the motor spin around. And but that you can look at something. And in your mind, you can kind of take it apart and see how all the different parts work.
And somehow it has to work. Somehow it has to make sense. So,
yes, yeah,
that it's exactly like that.
Yeah.
I don't know if any bubbles appear really, but yeah, I like that way to visualize what's happening.
Yeah, it would be interesting if someday. You know, I don't know if we'd want to do it because you don't want random images popping up, but, you know, have other people see, because for non-engine engineers to look at how an engineer is just focused on something, it's like, what's going on in your brain? I mean, I know there's something my mom always said, what is going on in his brain?
What do they call it? Augmented reality, it's getting somewhere similar to that, where you can see this visual diagram of a machine or an mm-hmm. engine, and then you can zoom in and manipulate it. Mm-hmm. But that's a world someone else constructed. You're just living in it. It's not sharing your own.
Exactly. Well, I want to thank you for coming and being on this episode. Adam is going to be on again next week, and we're going to be talking about a little bit about AI, about how AI learns, and some of the quirky, humorous, but also beautiful ways that we can look at AI, at machine learning, and how that interacts with the real world. But I'm glad that we had this time to get to know Adam, learn a little bit more about what he does and what he loves, and just a little bit about the complicated mind of an engineer and of a nerd.
Do I pass the nerd test?
Yes.
Okay.
A as my daughter says, A plus 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 plus.
Thanks, Seth. Thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah. So we will see you again next week, and we'll have another great conversation with Adam. We'll talk to you then.
Thanks, Seth.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Nerding Out with That Nerdy Catholic. I really enjoyed this conversation with Adam. He is someone that I definitely have an easy time nerding out with. I hope you've enjoyed this conversation as well. If you're watching this on YouTube, please click that like button. Click that subscribe button, especially that little bell, to get a notification on whenever I put up a new video. Head over to Nerdy Catholic Tees, the official / unofficial merch store of That Nerdy Catholic. This is a design that was created by a good friend of mine who's a hermit, a coworker of mine, and talking about Eucharistic adoration. And as an introvert, I definitely appreciate this. So head on over to Nerdy Catholic Tees and pick up your Nerdy Catholic quirky merch. If you're listening to this as a podcast, please like and rate it on your podcast platform of choice. Next week, we're going to be talking with Adam some more about artificial intelligence and machine learning. I'm really looking forward to that conversation, and I hope you are as well. So I hope to see you next week. This See you then. God bless.
System shut down.